Blog Talk Radio.
The Second Amendment to the Constitution. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
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 The Founding Fathers agree. Armed citizens make good government.
I ask, sir, what is the militia?
It is the whole people.
Who is the militia? Are they not ourselves?
To disarm the people, that is the best and most effective way to enslave them. George Mason.
Congress have no power to disarm the militia. Their swords and every other terrible implement of the soldier are the birthright of an American. Tench Cox, 1788.
The Constitution preserves the advantage of being armed, which Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation, where the governments are afraid to trust the people with arms. James Madison, Federalist, number 46.
A free people ought not only to be armed and disciplined, but they should have sufficient arms and ammunition to maintain a status of independence from any who might attempt to abuse them, which would include their own government. George Washington.
The Founding Fathers created the Bill of Rights, enshrined individual protections, including the Second Amendment, because they understood that power inherently corrupts. The Bill of Rights was set up to try to discourage bad behavior from government, try to further restrain it, and try to head off what they knew would eventually become misinterpretations of the law and attempts to misconstrue the intent of the founders. But their quotes here could not be more clear.
If the representatives of the people betray their constituents, there is then no recourse left but in the exertion of that original right of self-defense, which is paramount to all positive forms of government. Alexander Hamilton, The Federalist, number 28.
Are we at last brought to such a humiliating and debasing degradation that we cannot be trusted with arms for our own defense? Patrick Henry.
The Constitution shall never be construed to authorize Congress to prevent the people of the United States, who are peaceable citizens, from keeping their own arms. Samuel Adams.
The right of citizens to bear arms is just one more guarantee against arbitrary government, one more safeguard against the tyranny which now appears remote in America, but which historically has proved to be always possible. Hubert Humphrey.
All right, thanks so much for listening to our intro. I am Linda here from California. Welcome to Patriot Family Chat, and I got Bill from Indiana on the other line. I think Ron's calling in because his default player's not working, but whatever. And Rod, welcome to the show. Welcome, everyone. Hopefully some more people will join us. We'll see how that goes. We've put out the blogs, and we are here talking about the things of the day. Welcome, Bill.
How you doing, Linda?
Hanging in there.
That's about all any of us can do. We're at a point in time where those that are awake are seeing the big ruse that's been pulled over us and all this and that, and those that are asleep continue to be asleep.
Absolutely, yes.
It's a sad thing that so much is going on in our country and so many are indifferent to it. And as Rod said, you know, you watch them go out on the street and do a poll or talk to people, and you realize just how unattached and uninformed the public really is.
It's frightening. It really, truly is. I know Ron's just listening, but anytime you want to jump in, let us know. Welcome.
Absolutely. Thanks. Well, you know, Bill, to your point, I was watching, the rare occasion that I watch television. Yesterday, I was flipping channels, and I saw Vietnam in HD. And I thought, well, this could be an interesting program. And I was struck by something, and I'm a lot like you, Rod, Luke, every other man and many of the women that I've known my whole life. I grew up believing in an America that's not really, honestly, what we have or have had for well over 100 years. Nonetheless, I always felt very patriotic. I served in the military. I know you did as well. I felt it was my obligation to my country. And in watching this program, they were talking about the expeditionary force that they sent into Vietnam. And I was really struck by the pure, arrogant stupidity of what the narrator said. He was talking about the when the first expeditionary force got into South Vietnam, and they went into this one particular village, and of course, all the while remembering that they were just fearful of fighting this communist scourge that was infecting the Vietnamese and trying to rule the country. And God, they got into this village, and it was worse than they had even imagined. They uncovered a mass grave of 3,000 innocent civilians. Now, you stop right there, and that's horrible that the communists had killed 3,000 innocent civilians. What was our solution to that? 50,000 Americans? How many hundreds of thousands or millions of Vietnamese? That's the answer to this tragedy, this travesty of killing 3,000 innocent civilians, is we'll go in and expend 50,000 American lives and countless hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of other Vietnamese who were no longer at that point innocent civilians, right? Because the end justifies the means.
Wow.
And, by God, we're going to conscript you into service because we have a what? An obligation to protect, and we're going to promote our ideology of democracy around the world because, my God, who would want such barbarism as these 3,000 innocents murdered by the evil communist horde? Do you not see the total hypocrisy?
Well,
you know what I mean?
It's all become a slap in the face, Ron. We go into wars with no intent of winning anything.
We're just using
these wars to kill off our people.
It's cannon fodder. It had nothing to do. I mean, you know, I'm sure that a whole bunch of congressmen got all wet in their undies because they were worried of the evil red scourge. But my God, let's be honest for a minute. So let's see, and this is one of the reasons why I continually say that today's problems are yesterday's solutions. This is no different. This is no different than the justification of the way we get ourselves out of debt is to raise the debt limit and spend more debt. It's the same insanity, only, you know, instead of dealing with lives at an arm's length transaction or more, no, it's up close and personal. We're going to send our killers to kill your killers. It's ridiculous.
It's worse than the third grade. I know. It's sick. There's no logic to much of it.
There's too much smoke and mirrors, too much misdirections, and these things trying to throw you off of what's really happening. And as I try telling people, until that debt clock starts to spin in the other direction, you have a spending problem. It's never stopped spinning forward. So don't tell me you cut the debt. You didn't cut crap. All you did was slow down the spending. You're still spending.
And they also have a printing problem. I think the whole thing is just a mess. Absolute.
They're delusional. I was listening to Levin on my way home tonight, and I didn't get to listen to all of it. But he made a very good point. And that is, what was the stated purpose for the creation of the Federal Reserve? An easy answer is to provide a stable currency. Right?
Jeez.
Now, currency, as we already understand, is simply a reflection of someone's time. It's a unit of exchange.
Right.
How do you stabilize the buying habits, wants, and needs of an economy, a whole country? You don't. You can't. You know, you look at some obnoxious, innocuous thing. Tickle Me Elmo, perfect example. The thing, well, I mean, you know, it was this little doll. No,
right.
different than any other doll, but evidently the buying public thought so, and it went viral. It went
like the Cabbage Patch Kids.
Right. Nobody could predict that any more than they can predict what the public's buying habits are going to be tomorrow. Or what? Yes, there are trends and there are certain things that we have to have. But by and large, if there's one thing we ought to have learned from history, is that you can't control an economy. It doesn't work.
Right. Well, yeah, and they've tried it for how long? In how many different places? Everything,
you know what
that
they
was
say about insanity, right?
Yeah, everything I've read about these things, which I plan on reading a lot more, when I read Hayek's stuff and I read stuff from the Ayn Rand Center, my God, that was central economic planning in every country on the earth in the 20s and 30s. And look what a mess it is. And then, of course, our guys back in the 1700s fight against all that nonsense, but what are they doing at the top of the 20th century here? They want to bring it all back from Europe. Just march it all back in. I'm like, what's wrong with these people? Do they not learn anything?
They're all tied in together, Linda.
They're all
the European government is tied in to the Fed and stuff. What we're doing is passing debt around. We're trading debt back and forth, but the debt never decreases.
Well, it never gets paid.
That's the problem. It's never paid. It's only shuffled from one set of books to another. And that's why I said at some point you're going to hit critical mass. Everybody's carrying debt on their books. And the downfall of our system here in the United States is the fact that we were, by hook or by crook, the world reserve currency. And that has allowed us to do something that is artificial. And that is we've been allowed to spend well beyond our productive means for decades and decades, mm-hmm. and it is going to come home to roost.
Yeah,
to use Mr. Jeremiah Wright's phrase, the chickens are going to come home to roost. It's happening. I just read today an article where China is in negotiations with New Zealand to trade between themselves in their respective currencies, eliminating the dollar trade from New Zealand's necessaries. China is New Zealand's biggest trading partner. China just eclipsed Australia. And I don't think that the American people, well, I know that the American people don't have the first clue, not a scintilla of an idea of what the reserve currency status of the U.S. dollar means. But they will soon know what the absence of it means.
that's true.
And that's sad. That is scary.
If our Senate gets their way, we're going to see a huge increase in our debt right away.
Well, one of the things that I hear some of the patriots out there, or self-proclaimed or otherwise, complain about is cheap Chinese products, slave labor from overseas, right? All these terrible, detrimental things. And what I've tried to explain to them is, you know what? You ought to be thanking your lucky stars that there is a China and that their currency is trading at 7-1 against ours, $1 worth 7 of their dollars. Because were it not for those cheap Chinese products, you would, sir, fully understand the term inflation and poverty.
Oh, yeah.
That is going to come, and it's coming sooner than they believe. And then they will understand when cheap Chinese products are now expensive, for the average American consumer, when the throwaway garbage that we used to scoff at coming from China is now like the top-of-the-line junk that the average American can afford, they're going to find out what it's all about. It's coming. I'm telling you, it's coming.
So along with that horrible inflation, which, there's no way around it, what will happen to the ability of our Treasury to actually issue checks for ABC, welfare this and welfare that and Medicare this? And
you're now talking about two separate things. There is a there's a global economy,
right?
Okay, which many of our corporations and most all of us rely on for trade with other countries.
Right.
That's one aspect of it.
Okay.
The other aspect is the local economy right here in the good old U.S. of A. And you explain to me, or you tell me, if you can foresee a time when, let's say, the rest of the global community gives us the middle finger and
right.
says we're no longer going to accept your dollar, or, you know, we'll accept it, but it's going to be like the freaking Mexican peso. Okay, it'll be 13 of our dollars for one Chinese dollar. And when
right.
that happens, do you believe for a moment that your federal government is going to rush in to save your day? Or do you think they're just going to continue on sending you the Social Security check at the same level that you've been getting for the last 6 months or 6 years? Our seniors and the poor are going to be the very first ones to get decimated. Ron
yep.
Paul talked about this. He warned about it. The guy's been warning about it since the freaking 80s, but everyone seems to think that he's from the moon because, you know, well, he's weak on foreign policy. Go,
oh my God.
You know, I challenge you, go listen to the man's foreign policy before you spouting off sounding like a fool.
It's true.
Well,
it is. I know.
We're about to, if the Senate gets their way, they're about to destroy our local economies anyway.
When haven't they gotten there?
Yeah, you can't bring in millions of people and give them loopholes to get to all kinds of benefits and stuff they've never paid into and stuff. The Heritage Foundation put it at over $6 trillion. That's based on 11 million people. When you add it up, how many people's really here, and you find that out, it's going to be a lot higher than 11 million, but when you add in family reunification, and it's a continuing process. That is, you realize then they are signing this country into financial disaster.
Oh, Bill, we're hosed. We're absolutely hosed. You know, I've been preaching this ever
yep.
since I got on the air. And, you know, I'm no longer from the moon, evidently, because people are starting to pay attention finally. And I'm not directing that at you guys here, but I'm just saying, for God's sakes, you know, a little mental clarity is all it takes to sit back, step back. And, you know, one of the things I used to say is that we have a forest for the trees problem. We're so near the trees, we can tell that's a pine tree and that's an elm tree,
yeah.
that we can't see the forest. All we can see is the couple of trees that are clouding our vision. And
right.
out of a sense of, you know, displaced or not, out of a sense of nationalism, which I think is terribly dangerous, obviously,
mm-hmm.
because it's allowed us to get to this point.
Yeah.
We lost our individuality. And I think if you look at our history, you can trace it back to a point in time that culminated with the Civil War, or at least the end of the Civil War.
Right.
That was the end of individualism, and it certainly was arguably the end of state sovereignty.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And,
otherwise,
you know,
they would have been able to secede and nobody would have bothered them.
Well, and we completely, they did secede and they shouldn't have bothered them. The war should not have been fomented.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, slavery was on its way out. And I'm not here to advocate, you know, that slavery was good. I think it was a wretched thing. That
yep.
anyone would believe that one human being can purchase and own another one as property. You know, purple, yellow, black, white means that absolutely means nothing to me.
Yeah.
With respect to the idea of owning another human being.
Exactly.
We lost the sense of identity that it is us, we the people that created government.
Yep.
And government should depend on us for its existence, not the other way around.
And it's on its head. I know that. And when you talk about the slavery issue, I mean, just read a few paragraphs of Honest to God history, and you will understand where all that slavery started and what color was owning who, what color, way back in the 1400s, et cetera, or further back. It's not a color issue. It's, you're right, it's the owning of another, which is, as far as God's concerned, forbidden. And we do have.
But if you look at the global agenda, they're trying to bring it back. Only they're
well,
not
sure
going to move our race. They're not going to move our race.
It's going to be everybody.
What do you call it when you take a person and you give them housing and food and medical care, right? And then expect them to work, to be productive for you. You've got to produce. Wasn't that slavery?
Exactly.
Well, yeah, especially, well, it's called communism under Stalin's little old regime. Yeah.
We could communism, socialism, fascism, Marxism.
Horrible stuff, yeah.
All of it, no matter how you want to slice it, it comes down to slavery.
Servitude. It's bondage. It's hugely bondage.
Absolutely.
Whether it's Pharaoh, whether it's Pol Pot, it doesn't matter what their name is. They're doing the same thing. They're human.
Right.
We live on
and
Earth.
It doesn't matter.
It comes down to the greedy want to be in total control, and they actually think that they're above everybody else, and everybody else should have to fall in line to their ideologies and whatever they dictate.
Doesn't matter to me what their motivation is. I don't care what motivates you to steal from me. I don't care what motivates you to want to kill me. I really don't care if you want to kill me. I'm going to hopefully kill you first. Okay, that's self-preservation.
Exactly.
But, you know, the idea that you can justify robbing me, stealing from me, under the guise of any justification, you're still a thief. You're still a crook.
That's right.
In my book, that makes you a liar and a thief.
Yeah,
that's kind of how I look at politics, Ron. They come out here, and it's all about you support them. If you don't support them, they try to get rid of you.
Well, that's true. That's the totalitarian regime we're under now with Holder and the rest of the little clowns. But this has been going on for a long time. This is just... The only reason we're seeing it so clearly, I think, now is because they're unzipping the sheep's things and just pulling it back and letting you see. You know, I mean, the Bushes and the Cheneys, they kept their sheep's deal on all the time. You know what I mean?
Well, they at least tried to keep an air of, you know,
exactly.
Oh, deniability, plausible deniability.
Yeah.
You know, I got an email today from the Tea Party Patriots.
Okay.
I've said before, I personally have met Jenny Beth Martin. She lives here locally, and she's the quote-unquote founder of the Tea Party Patriot. I tried to talk with Jenny Beth when she was at my shop getting her car serviced.
Okay.
I did not find her very open-minded or receptive. I did find her husband to be a little more open-minded.
Wow.
But Jenny Beth, in my view, and she's always welcome to come and refute anything that I'm going to say here, but she was, from all intents and purposes that I could see, a dyed-in-the-wool statist Republican. She was all for the war machine and the, you know, U.S. defense spending, but all against anything else that, you know, was the pet projects, drill here, drill now. You know, she's all in favor of that. She was just playing all the mantra, all the BS talking points that hopefully, you know, by now we understand we're just that, BS talking points. It's garbage. It's total garbage. And it's this whole left-right BS paradigm.
I know.
Junk
I know.
That is designed at nothing more than to keep you at one another's throats.
And,
you know, I got this this email. And she's talking about, oh, it's time to take back our country. And, you know, I really wanted to send her an email back and say, Jenny, we had our chance in 2008 to elect a true patriot and statesman. We also had that opportunity in 2012, and had you and your followers had the patriotic desire and drive.
And temerity.
Behind this man. We might not be having this conversation right now, but that's okay. I'm glad it worked out the way it did, because I also told you all that if by some miracle Dr. Paul would have been elected, you know what would have happened. The collapse is inevitable. It's coming anyway, and they would have blamed it all on him.
Sure. The same way that Barry's been blaming Bush for the last 5 years.
Certainly. Well, at least now he's figured out that he can put a little Vicks vapor rub in the corner of his eye and it'll well up a tear, you know, on command.
Oh, God. Oh, that, I can't. It's just beyond. There's so, and
that's
the
beyond the pale. You are right.
beyond that, I mean, when you look at what's surrounding him, we've got Hildebeest, the former first lesbian, and we've got Derelict Holder. You know, I mean, those people are despicable. We've got the Valerie Jarretts and the whole machine behind this guy. I mean, you got to know that the Chicago machine is behind this guy and a few others and the globalists. This I do believe.
Well, and you have to ask the question, right? I mean, and I've been saying this, why now? Why now? Because there have been, I mean, let's face it, this whole IRS thing goes back many years.
Uh-huh.
And I can take you back to articles. Hell, let's go back to when Poppy Bush was first in office. Let's go back to when Poppy Bush was vice president under Reagan. I can still to this day remember, and I didn't know it at that time, but hindsight being what it is, I remember the day that Congress passed 7201 and 7203 of the Internal Revenue Code, Title 26, 7201, 7203.
Oh, wow.
I remember Poppy Bush walking out on the House floor addressing people, you know, as he's waving around this new bill, we got this new thing, right? That if you can show that the IRS is not following the rules, we'll give you $1 million. It's still
there.
Oh
my gosh. Oh my
God. Go look up 7201, 7203. That's improper disclosure of return information. There was a doctor down in Florida that sued because the IRS sent letters to 1,200 of his patients, informing them that the good doctor was under investigation. He sued and won. You know, I've been trying to get a hold of that doctor for 5 years.
Wow.
I only have one question. Did you ever get paid?
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Wow.
I'm betting he never saw a penny.
Yeah, this is,
well, you know. We run into the same problem with Agenda 21, Ron. When we're talking about it, people think it's one party, and it's not. It's both parties put us here. Both parties have been involved in putting steps in place to promote the agenda, and they're still doing it today.
Right.
And at every level, for God's sakes.
Yes. Bill, did you see the one I posted, and I can't remember who the originator was, on Agenda 21, and it starts out with Monsanto, and they were connecting the dots between that and Common Core and everything else. I mean, there was a ton of stuff. So what I can do is I can try to copy links for you, Ron, and get it in an email form. I don't know if I sent stuff to you. I know I've sent so much stuff out today. I've been on this computer practically the whole day trying to catch up on stuff.
I know I got an email that looked like it was from you.
Okay.
That had a link that you couldn't get to work that was on a Facebook page.
Yeah.
And I sent you a link to that, what you were looking for, Take Back America. It's AmericanNewVoice.org, I believe it is. And, you know, that, my God, that in and of itself, if you go and read it, what they're talking about, oh, man, you know, I agree with these people. It's America's Voice Now, delivering truth and exposing mainstream propaganda. What they're talking about is something that we should have been hollering about for a long time. And basically, what it is they're starting July 4th.
Right.
They want to take back, plan to take back America.
Oh, that's, yes, that's the one, yeah.
Where they're telling business owners, stop sending tax payments in. Everybody, basically exactly what I've been talking about, stop paying.
I know.
Just everybody say no, right?
Right.
And then I go down and read some of these, oh, my God, some of the freaking responses.
Oh, the responses, I know.
Oh.
It's very sad when you read the responses. No, I the reason it caught my eye was because you had talked about this. You and Philo and everybody else were talking about starving the beast for a long, long time, and just cut it off. Just stop paying and, you know, making your employers stop being tax collectors for the stupid damn IRS and the rest of them. I mean, it's insane, and it would work, but how do you get that many, you know what I mean? It would be great, but to get everybody
one at
to
a time,
cooperate.
It's like that. Like how do you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time.
I know. I get you.
It says all businesses cease sending in sales tax, employee contribution taxes, and any other funds that go to the state or federal government. Withhold any payments made to any government agency, either state or federal. Withhold all real estate tax payments. Withhold all payments to banks, mortgage companies, auto loans,
credit card.
All of it. Stop. Just stop. It's... And you know how easy that would be?
I know.
Just stop.
And within 2 months, the whole thing would collapse.
It wouldn't take 2 months.
See, that's the beauty.
But I'll tell you what, and here's the beauty of it to me. What would happen? Government would continue right on. You would hear a lot of squawking.
Right.
But you wouldn't see much change in the way of federal government and how it conducts its business. And that, ladies and gentlemen, would expose the fallacy.
Yes, of this taxation
that they
nonsense.
Need your taxes.
That's right. Oh, I know.
Oh, without your taxes, my God, government would come to an end. What a farce.
Well, the parts that we don't want around anymore might come to an end. The things, those alphabet soup agencies, which I'd love to see dry up on the vine. You know, yesterday, and we've already been through those. We know who they are. So, believe me, I don't know if that would help if we starved them as much as we could. Maybe they'd have to cut back on that behemoth they call the federal Leviathan government. I hate them.
Boy.
Well,
and I'll tell you, I caught another great video today, and it was an interview on RT, Russian Times, with Michael Schurer. Now, I don't know if anybody remembers who Michael Schurer is. He, former CIA. He was a former head of the Bin Laden unit within the CIA.
Oh, wow.
And they were discussing our war on terrorism and several other things. And Mr. Schurer gave almost a prophetic interview. The first thing he said was that as long as our government believes that they're chasing an enemy that wants to kill us and attack us because we're prosperous and because we let women vote and because we have women in political office and all these other things, we will never win. And the reason we will never win is because we're fighting an enemy that doesn't exist. He said, now the minute that our government begins to recognize that the reason that many of these radical fundamentalists want to punish us and bring pain upon the United States is because of our foreign policy and our intervention in the affairs of their countries and their governments and their religious ideologies, so then we might be onto something and we might be able to figure out how to actually end the aggression between us.
Wow.
He sounded an awful lot like some guy named Ron Paul.
Yeah, it sure does. Absolutely.
And then she went on to ask him, and let us not forget that this was at a time when that this interview was at a time when Mr. Frank Winkle was still with us.
Yep.
Frank and I were discussing how exactly, because I had sent Frank an email about the Saudis siding with Israel against Iran. And we were postulating on what could be pulled off to accomplish that, to get the Saudis to side with Israel against Iran. And wouldn't you know it, a story broke that the Iranians were trying to assassinate the Saudi ambassador to the United States. And were doing so through the use of some dude that worked for the Mexican drug cartels. Remember when that story broke? Remember that?
Yeah.
Everybody was incensed, especially Israel, and by God, the Saudis chimed right in with them. And Mr. Schurer, who worked against Iran, mainly through Hezbollah, his own words, he said he found it dubious at best because he said everything that he'd experienced from the Iranians is that they work absolutely meticulously to cover their tracks, and they exclusively use people from within Iran to carry out any of their dirty deeds.
Wow.
So the fact that he would be going through some, you know, third-level middleman through some Mexican drug cartel just sounded like pure fantasy based on everything that he was familiar with Iran and how they conduct their intelligence affairs.
Wow.
Then he went on, the interviewer went on to ask him about Libya. Now remember, this was way back. This was a long time ago. Long before, and he said, I don't believe that Libya would become a hotbed of terrorism. He said, what I do believe would happen is that it would become highly destabilized if the U.S. and NATO continue meddling.
Right.
And they would become highly anti-American. And, you know, they have connections to the very same Mujahideen that we were helping to fight the Soviets, and they would turn on us, the United States. And that was long before Benghazi.
Yeah, you know,
now what we have is we have McCain going over and talking to rebels that, for all we know, are listed as terroristic enemies of our country.
Well, ironically enough, the interviewer asked Michael Schur about Syria and the broader Middle East. And he said, you know, it's hard to imagine Syria being a viable threat to anyone. Look at them.
I know.
Look at Syria on a map. And look at the scope of the United States military power. He said, it's preposterous. He said, what does pose a threat? He said, it poses a threat to the stability of Israel. And he said, your United States Congress is completely bought and paid for by Israel. Make no mistake about it. We do Israel's bidding. It's a fantastic video.
That's amazing. How did the Saudis fit in with all this? I mean, other than they have a lot of wealth, the ones who run the country, and have all the oil.
You know how they fit in, Linda? It's the petrodollar.
Right.
Plain and simple. It's a mutually beneficial relationship between the federal government and the Saudis, which is why we've turned a blind eye and allowed them to progenerate the majority of the extremists, for God's sakes. If we're going to separate out Islam into extremist fundamentalist Islam and then the rest of Islam, I don't know what the hell the rest would look like, but okay.
So if you want
to separate that out, the Saudis are the largest progenitor of that.
So here's my thing. Do you now, with everything you've just said about that interview and what we've known in the past, et cetera, and what we've seen happening, we've got Syria, we've got Libya, we've got all these Egypt and the Muslim Brotherhood and all these factions and CARE and ISNA or whatever they're called. And now you see why the founder said, keep away from entanglements with these people. I mean,
well,
everybody.
I agree. But look, and this is why I've said for some time that we're being played. We're being sold. We are being sold a story.
Oh, yeah. Huge.
It is why the creation of Israel was absolutely paramount. Okay?
Right. Yes.
Armageddon.
Right. Do you remember when you sent me that one video? This is going back about a year at least, where Ahmadinejad was sitting at a table with all those Hasidic Jews.
Yeah,
and they were
strange.
That was like a wake-up call for me.
That belies all the propaganda.
It's like, oh my God, and then you see, this is why I of course realize, and everybody in our room here understands that this is bread and circuses. We have been lied to so thoroughly for so damn long. I can't even figure out how long it's been and how big the lies are, and it it encompasses so much. It can go from the monetary system to the central economic planning to the welfare state to immigration to this, you know, the right-left paradigm to the Middle East, the Muslim Brotherhood, this, the, you know, who's on the right side of what. I mean, the whole thing is nonsense. And then we have Agenda 21. Then when you talked earlier today about the not being able to see the forest for those trees, I'm telling you, I have said this in front of my city council I don't know how many times. You guys are not stepping back and you are not looking at the big picture. You are too close and you're too cloistered and you are not seeing the giant puzzle. You must see the mothership or you're never going to understand. And that's why I actually, that one bill that I sent to you or posted up there, I copied that whole thing and I sent it to everyone on my city council today. Whether they're going to look at it or not, I don't know.
Well, they're in the problem, Ms. Linda. They don't want to see it. Every time I meet with one of my elected, I let them know right off the bat. Anything you can name, any problem you can name that we're having is directly related to Agenda 21.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean,
because
these are the global elitists.
It was, I'm not sure what the names were for it before, but Agenda 21 has been around for a long time.
One of them, Ron Centeby,
and
that was Agenda
regional. Yeah, we call it Agenda 21, although the name's been changed several times since we started calling it Agenda 21.
Yes. And let's connect the dots. Let's be honest about it, okay? Let's look at, for a minute, and this is, again, where we end up with this forest for the trees problem. And it's been so well cultivated, okay? So well cultivated. We all know the history between, you know, Stalin, Lenin, Pol Pot, Mao, right? The killing fields. Horrendous. Why is it that we don't have any, you know, anti-defamation league for any of those people? But for the Jews, okay, 6 million... That's what we're told.
Oh, I know.
And I don't know. Maybe that's an accurate number. I'm not saying that it never happened. I'm not Ahmadinejad. I'm not. That's not where I'm headed. Where I'm headed is this. Let's look back at the actors, the players. We know that as early as 1911, they were wanting to set up a global government, a United Nations, if you will.
Sure.
At the end of World War I, we've got this failed League of Nations. And the 12 points of light, you know, that later became 21 points of light under Bush, for God's sake. But nonetheless, that collapses. And in the remnants and after the ashes of World War II, we have the first opportunity to really reestablish. And it has to be on the heels of establishing Israel as a country again.
Wow.
That I believe that the establishment of Israel, modern day Israel, was absolutely keystone
to do this,
to pull this off. And
wow,
regardless of what you believe scripturally, we know that the two largest groups on the face of this planet identify themselves as Christian and Muslim.
Right.
So if you look at a larger picture, yes, you can divide people along sexual orientation, race, class, status, all of those things. And you can get those minor divisions here and there. But there is nothing as divisive, ladies and gentlemen, in the whole of this earth, as is religion. The two largest populations of peoples on the planet that claim one religion is Christians and Muslims. Do you think, by any stretch of the imagination, that it is some kind of freaking accident that our government, since the 1940s, since the end of World War II, has been meddling in the affairs of the Islamic countries?
Just dang,
and
because you know
the
what?
Creation of the nation state of Israel was nothing if it wasn't a gigantic thorn in the backside of Muslims and thumbing our nose right in their face.
Yep.
Meanwhile,
and you know why?
That Jewish state is not, they don't practice Judaism. They are not Jewish by tradition.
Right.
Okay? I mean, let's be honest. Judaism died in 70 AD. There's no more temple. There's no more sacrifice. There's nobody sprinkling the blood of rams and bullocks or anything else. It's dead and gone.
So, and you know what makes sense, why that makes sense, Ron, is because when I'm looking at the 30s and even 1944 in Germany and how the churches were attacked under Hitler, just in Germany alone, and true Christianity, even Catholicism, was attacked by the secular humanists, which we call the Nazis, is very prevalent. There was no holy war between Muslims and Christians. This was actually pure totalitarian, iron-fisted Hitler down on... there was no talk of Muslims. They were just trying to wipe out anybody that
Hitler
didn't
loved
believe.
The damn Muslims.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is, he wasn't trying to foment anything. All he wanted to do was kill the people he hated, and that was primarily the Jews, Bolsheviks, and, you know, blacks and gays or whatever. He wanted to lump in there. But he was going after religion, period. I mean, as far as people like Dietrich and the rest of them.
I think Vlad had it right, and Muslims were doing things way before the World War II and Nazis and all that.
Oh, certainly.
Well, they had... right.
I mean, let's be honest. Let's replay history. You go back, okay? Let's go back to World War I. Let's go back to let's go back before that. What was going on? Hell, who were the protectors of Jerusalem after 70 AD?
I don't know.
Two predominant groups. The first predominant group that came along, right, after 70 AD, because you got to realize, if you look at your history from 70 AD until the rise of Islam in, what, 580?
Okay.
There's
yes.
not much history to talk about. There's not much history to talk about in the area of Palestine or Pele or whatever else you want to call it. It was no longer mm-hmm. Israel. It was destroyed, demolished, eviscerated by the Romans. But you had the collapse of the Roman Empire. And then you had the rise of the Muslims, who you had the Merovingians, right, the Knights Templar, but you also had the Russians, the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
They were the Orthodox Christians. They saw themselves as the defenders of Christianity in that realm of the world. Go look it up. Go read the freaking history. Nobody, not the Knights Templar, not the Church, not the Catholic Church, not the Orthodox Christians. None of them were trying to reestablish Jerusalem and Judaism. Why?
Yep, it's pretty crazy.
They were trying to preserve the holy sites of Christianity, but mm-hmm. Judaism was, I promise you, long since dead.
Well, yeah, right, when you're reading the scripture and you're going back to 70 AD and the wars of, was it Josephus that you had mentioned before?
Josephus Flavius, the Jewish wars, and the last real uprising was the Bokhabar uprising in 135. And the Romans slaughtered a couple of million of the remaining Jews. And just to add insult to injury, they went ahead and drug a plow across the Temple Mount in Jerusalem again.
Good grief.
And they sprinkled salt on the ground so that nothing would grow. And they erected a statue, a temple, to Jupiter.
Oh, lovely.
So that ought to tell you something. My goodness, Christians should go back and read Revelation, okay? Understand what Revelation is. It's the revelation of Jesus Christ. Go and read the book prior to that, telling you that, you know, the Messiah is coming, the Savior is coming, and he will be enthroned with the Most High, sitting at the right hand of God. Well, that's what Revelation was about. It was the revelation of the divinity of Christ and recognizing Christ as the right hand of God and God's judgment. And you read the history. It happened, guys. It happened. 70 AD was the end of that age entirely. You want to talk about, you know, Hitler? My God, go back and see how many Jews the Romans absolutely just brutally murdered.
Wow.
To the point that the soldiers said, hey, can we just not do this anymore? My arm's about to fall off. I've killed so many people.
That's amazing. That's horrible. You're right. I mean, we're up against it, and as you look through this mess, and you it's so hard to figure out what's real anymore, and we are fighting darkness and principalities. Of course, we have forever.
This whole story has been spun since the first century church. Since you had the split in the early church, the Council of Nicaea on forward, take a look at it. My God, just learn the history. And, you know, it's one thing to know our history. It's fairly easy because it's only a couple of hundred years old. But when we start delving deeper into the history, look at the motivations, connect the dots, put the whole story together. I'm telling you. It's not a matter of what I believe necessarily, but
right.
I don't know, Ron. I listen to you, Ron. I get the feeling the United States should never existed.
You know, I wonder if it should have. Yeah, I mean, the odds were pretty damn long, and I know we like to think of divine providence and things like that, but I wonder how much of that really is true and how much of it was, you know, show. My God, go back and read the Treaty at Paris.
Right.
And then what happened in 1791? Who are we told, for God's sakes, who helped us win the war, the Revolutionary War?
France.
Yep.
The Indians.
There was somebody else, too. Huh. They always get left out for some reason. The Tsar of Russia.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, he sent ships and troops. They're left out. But France, most definitely. Who did the U.S. side with in England's war with France in 1791?
Russia.
We sided with England.
Yeah.
Hadn't we just, ladies and gentlemen, won our independence from Great Britain, and now we're going to side with Great Britain in their war against the very people that were instrumental?
It's insane. You're right.
In our independence, and that makes sense to you how?
Doesn't. None of it does. I don't know. All I know is there is a blueprint, and it is the Bible. And, you know, I think that since, you know, I was watching Glenn today, and the guy who wrote it was basically a couple books, but one of them was How Do You Kill 11 Million People? Answer is you lie to them. And Andy Andrews was on, and he was talking about, you know, how do you change the culture? Well, everybody has a culture. You just have to change your thinking. And I think he was correct on that. And the only way people are going to look at you with any credibility is not by what so much what your factions are or this or that. It's what you actually do or don't do, your actions. People are rewarded or punished, I think, by their actions or their behavior. That's how you train children. If you are virtuous and you have good manners, you're probably going to be much more employable when you're 18. You know, that's action. And so that plays a big part.
Let me put something in perspective, or at least attempt to, and I hope you understand, I'm not trying to alienate anybody, and Bill is certainly not trying to alienate you, but I know you're pragmatic enough. Hitler killed how many people?
11 million, according to the
11 million.
Whatever the stats.
How many Native Americans do you believe that your government dispatched in the founding of this great country?
I bet it was a lot.
Yeah, because who knows? How can you possibly know?
Well, let me ask you this: how many Native Americans were killed by other Native Americans prior to us coming here?
Sure. Look, I have no doubt that there were. You know. This is the way man treats other men. We kill each other.
It's ridiculous.
That seems to be the predominant way, you know. Like Linda said, it's like we're in the third grade. We're going to get in a fist fight at recess on the damn playground. The only difference is now we have nuclear weapons.
Oh, yeah. Instead of just machetes. God.
Right. Or a stone axe.
Yeah.
You know?
Or a stone
and
to
I mean,
kill
let's
Abel.
Face it, we slaughtered them. Now, that's not to let the Spanish off the hook in South America, or the or the English, or the Portuguese, or the French, or anyone else. You know, slavery, when we talk about the African slaves, that was a matter of expediency and pragmatism. You go read about it. You know, South America is where the slave trade first started, because when they were enslaving the indigenous people down there, they dropped dead in the fields. They refused to work. They couldn't get any production out of them, because those people were accustomed to being free. And were they
enslaved to build these huge shrines and stuff they have in South America and Mexico and these other places?
It could be that they were enslaved, or it could be that it was their culture. And, of course, they were led a culture of fear. You know, again, I'm not trying to give anybody a pass.
Well, their culture was much the same, Ron.
I know it is.
Lower class was the slaves.
It's the culture of man. And mankind, you know, Calvin had it right. Every single one of us are wretched, evil creations.
Right.
And I believe that, you know, the evil is not a creation. It's the absence of something. It's the absence of God and the will of God in our hearts.
Right.
But he created us even knowing that we were going to be horrible, wicked, and we were going to murder each other. He did it anyway because he loves us that much.
It's amazing.
Because
I know.
We can't see the end,
right? Right, and he can.
And he does. He knows it from the beginning.
He knows all of it, which is also astounding, because we can't think like that. We're very finite. I mean, it's pretty clear that we are, because look what we keep doing. We're such little schmendricks, we can't get it. We just can't get it right. We're trying.
Because
some of us are trying.
We can't keep our noses out of everybody else's business. They can't keep their noses out of our business. Everybody wants to tell someone else how they should do this or how they should do that. You know, when I first became a supervisor and I had success at it, it was because of one thing. Because I kept it in my mind every day when I went in there to treat the people the way I wanted to be treated when I was one of them. And,
absolutely.
You know, that's what it was. It was a mutual thing. We don't have that anymore.
You know, Bill,
wants to push their ideology on the rest of us. The other side wants to push theirs. There's no in-betweens.
You know, I read a book a while back, and it's a very old book. It's several, you know, well, depends on who you talk to, but at least, you know, it was at least codified around 125. And in that book, they were quoting this amazing individual that was walking the earth. And he said essentially what you're saying is, he said, why don't you pick at the beam in your own eye before you mess with the speck of dust in your neighbor's eye? Because that's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
See, if we would busy ourselves with approving ourselves for our father, and approving, you know, wanting to be a good reflection upon God and Christ for the sacrifice, instead of worrying about, well, that guy over there is gay and he's got a pierced earring and he's got a tattoo, that's a sin, and she's dating Jimmy who's dating Sally who's dating Bobby, and that's a sin, the whole damn thing's a sin. And, you know, we go around busybodying, worrying about what everybody else is doing instead of just focusing on not trespassing upon our own neighbors and trying to show ourselves approved before God.
We have the same problems today, Ron. Look at our government.
Point out.
One side gets caught in something bad and they go back and reflect, well, the other side did it first. It's like neither one ever heard two wrongs don't make a right.
Well, but the ends justify the means.
It's pretty nuts.
That's what
I was
talking about with that special on Vietnam. My God, they killed 3,000 innocent civilians. Solution? Go kill a million of them.
It's nuts.
That
doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's a solution. Absolutely.
Well, maybe if we made our politicians actually go fight the wars that they put us in.
Well, I don't even think
they should be the first people sent.
I don't think they should fight wars. What I think they should do is take the highest elected officials and put them in a friggin' cage match.
Hey, well, let's be real. Vladimir would kick the crap out of Obama.
Yeah, so would
my
niece.
I don't know. Obama might sneak a reach around on him or something. You never know.
We had to get that in, didn't we?
God Almighty. And, you know, and I'm sitting at work today, and I was actually typing out a response to Jenny Beth Martin in her email. And I've got a girl that works for me a couple of days a week when my store manager is off or when I'm off.
Right.
And she's a sweet kid. She's, I don't know if I say kid, she's 38. And she comes out and lays a note on my desk as I'm on the phone and typing on the computer. And the note says, the customer up front is making me feel very uncomfortable with sexual innuendos. And so I stopped what I was doing. I said, "What? The guy that just left?" She said, "No, he's still up there." She said, "I can't go back up there." Now, she didn't tell me everything he had said to her. Had she done that, I would have invited him to leave immediately. I walked up front, and he looks at me and says, "How long does it usually take for an oil change?" I said, "Well, I guess that depends on how many sexual innuendos you want to throw at my female coworker." And he says, "Oh, man, I'm sorry, but it started with," I said, "I don't give a damn what it started with. It ends right here. It's
wow.
inappropriate, and I won't tolerate it."
You know, I'm a lot
good
of
for
fans.
You.
And he
good
says, I'm sorry." Well, after he left, she was telling me some of the things he was saying to her. You know, had she told me that initially, I would have called the police.
Wow, that bad, huh? Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
and
not right.
I would have invited him to go to jail. And he's sitting there talking to me about his wife is at the movies right now, and he doesn't want to call her. And, and I'm thinking, really?
Oh, wow.
I'll call her.
That's funny. Oh, my Lord. Yeah. Now, you know, wow.
I don't understand our, how our society's got, because there isn't our respect anymore. It's the kids today and how they've taught our kids to react to us and to others. It's all disrespect. There's no respect, and they're never going to understand that without giving it, you're never going to get it.
It's earned.
It's
absolutely
earned. It's a two-way street
on both sides.
Yep.
Yes, it is.
I feel like Rodney Dangerfield all of a sudden. No respect. No respect at all. But it's true.
Okay,
it's,
yeah, he
it
was
is the damn truth. And you know, the sad thing is, Bill, I think what it comes from is that they don't respect themselves.
That's got to be it.
We sit and talk about the Native Americans and others and how they were treated. But you know, there were actually people who came here to this new world who tried to be friendly with the Indians and everything, tried to be a partner with the Indians.
Certainly.
And, it's in our instant histories if you look at it. The problem was the ones that came that didn't try to be friendly and partners and work together.
Well,
that covetousness, you know, when you start
covering you had we were learning from the Indians. They were learning from us. We were learning together about each other. But you had those who want control, who's greed. You know, they want the land. They want the value. They want the wealth. But they don't want to be.
They want what's not theirs.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's an ancient old problem and you know, and then you get the what I call the extremists, which would be any of the Stalins or the Pol Pots and the rest of them. Not only do they want what you have, they want you to have zero and have no freedom at all. And that's it. And those are the evil ones. And I think the only reason we've survived this long is I really think it's because some of us with good hearts outnumber the bad ones.
Well, I think we've survived this long in spite of ourselves.
Well, yeah.
And we have created a culture in this country where there is, you know, it blows me away. There's no self-respect. People don't respect their own bodies. They don't have any concept of freedom or liberty. This is going back to what Immanuel Kant was writing about.
Sure.
That morality follows freedom, not the other way around. Without liberty, there is no self-respect. There's no respect for others, and morality declines rapidly.
History is
full of those examples.
And we are full of examples of people fleeing those kinds of places, trying to go someplace and establish someplace that was more moral and had a moral base to it. And where we got, there's no place left to go.
Right, and when I remember that one thing that was sent, Ron had it out there, and it was a gentleman speaking about the monetary system, but he was talking about force, and when you use force to do anything, you're going to get the opposite of what you started out to do.
Claim to desire, you're going to get the opposite.
Right, exactly. And look at history, like you talk about the absence of freedom, and you, outside of the fact that we had the 236 years of, quote, that great experiment, that idea that the individual is a sovereign who was created by a creator and has these unalienable rights, which was amazing in itself because, you know, all prior to that, and you look at the other cultures from the beginning of time until that Declaration of Independence and that experiment, it was barbarism and totalitarianism and hell on earth for whoever was not in charge.
But my God, go back and look at our history from... Let's look at our history from 1775 until present day and see if you can look through there and find me the longest span of time in our 230-year history that we were not at war somewhere with someone.
That's a tough one.
I mean, you had the French and Indian Wars, you had the damn Revolutionary War. The minute that the Revolutionary War was over, we ratified our Constitution and went immediately to siding with the English against the French.
Right.
You know, we had all these incursions, the Plains campaigns. Then you come up on the War of 1812. You know,
Spanish,
we know what was going
War,
on there.
Mexican
you
War.
Got the Spanish-American War, the Mexican War.
Yep.
You've got our blowing up one of our own ships in Havana Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
To blame it on the Spanish.
Oh yeah,
back in the
false flag.
Then we go right into you're right, the Barbary pirates over, you know, the, my God, Tripoli, let's not forget that. And then we roll right into the Civil War, and right after the Civil War, man, Grant, huh? Oh, him and Sherman, they were chawing at the bit to go after the damn Mexicans. I mean, there is not a time in our history where we haven't been at war with someone.
It's pretty crazy.
You know,
we
bring up that Hispanic history there, too. Never, never has Mexico been a friend to the United States. They have always allowed our enemies to cross their borders, to use their borders to come into our country. Always.
Well, sure.
Yet we still kiss their butts.
Well, but, you know, they were largely, you know, they were largely colonized and domesticated, if you want to use such a term, and Catholicized by the Spanish.
Yeah.
So,
right.
I mean, we're still fighting.
Exactly.
We're still fighting the frickin' Spanish-American War, for God's sakes.
Yeah, exactly. It's so upside down. But I mean,
I'm one of these people that study
our government
ancient histories and cultures. And if you look into the ancient cultures of South America, they don't want to talk about it because it's revealing of something that would totally blows a hole in their whole concept of who they are.
Now, Bill, don't you go talking about universal language and all that stuff.
No. I'm talking about their most ancient civilizations in Bolivia and Peru.
That's what
totally
I'm
contradict
about.
The ideology that they are who was here first.
Oh, no, I understand that. And, yeah, I mean, you know, look, we decimated, our government decimated the economy in Mexico. We've decimated the economy in Argentina. We decimated the economy in most of South America. Good God. Go read, you know, Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. Go
right.
read about Argentina's, you know, and this is recent. And, you know, go read some of the stuff that John Perkins has written about the Confessions of an Economic Hitman. When you start connecting all the damn dots, and I hate to keep doing it, but you have got to go back to when this thing really got its wobbly legs underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end of World War II and the creation of the United Nations.
Yeah,
I believe with all my heart and soul, that the nation of Israel was absolutely necessary. It was a necessity for that to be in place to foment all that has come since. Has nothing to do, in my mind at least, not a damn thing to do with the divinity of the Jews in the eyes of God. It has nothing to do with being anti-Semitic. Has nothing to do with disliking someone because of the color of their skin or their claimed heritage. It has to do with reality.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, Ron, you throw me off, too, when you say Christians, because that's lumping Christianity, and I consider there a difference between that and Catholicism.
Oh, Catholicism? Well, absolutely.
There.
And look, if I wanted to be absolutely accurate, I would say the Jewish Christians or the Christian Jews, because if you're going for complete accuracy, scripturally speaking, then the only Jews that would exist on the face of this planet today, or for that matter, in 70 AD or beyond, were Christians. Those that followed the teachings of Christ in the Gospels.
And that to me, that's where the Gentiles come in, always had their advantage, because the Gentiles were the only ones that never denied Christ.
Well, let's see. It's not just the Gentiles, because I do believe that, you know, Paul and Simon and several of the other disciples were, in fact, of Jewish heritage. From the 12 tribes, but they followed Christ and, in fact, were martyred for him and for speaking his word, for spreading the gospel. That's why, you know, Christ put his hand on Peter's shoulder and said, "On this rock I will build my church, my kingdom." And that's why the Catholics claim Peter, Saint Peter to the Catholics, was the first pope. Well, that's totally missing the point of what Christ was talking about. Peter was one of an elite group of men who were followers of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And if we read Revelation, and we read Revelation 21, where John sees descending from heaven the new Jerusalem, the new city, and he gives an account of that city, and that city has 12 foundation stones. 12 is the number of Israel, 12 tribes. And on each of the foundation stones, 12, was written the name of an apostle. Peter would be among them. That's the foundation of Christ's church, which is the new city, Jerusalem, that John is seeing figuratively descending from heaven. He gives an account of the length and breadth of the city, saying that it is a square, and it is 12 stadia by 12 stadia by 12 stadia, meaning it's 12 by 12 by 12. It's a cube. 12 is the number of what? That's right, Israel. The walls are 144 thick. Where does that number 144 come from? Didn't we read that somewhere in the New Testament? in the Gospels talking about the remnant
that
were 144,000?
Yes.
Okay? Look, I'm telling you, it's important to know these things. This is why I believe that the vast majority of Christians or Christianity or those that claim to be Christians are thoroughly and completely being misled by the current designs of this thing that's being sold to us.
Right.
Because we've gotten it wrong on our scripture and understanding what that book is telling us.
Well, there's also a multitude that no man can count.
Yeah.
To me, that's the, I believe that to be the Gentiles.
Well, what one of the problems we have when we look at Revelation, and there's some historical things, and we know, well, first of all, let me back up. When we look at a prophet, there is a biblical test, litmus test, for a prophet. He's either 100% accurate or he's not a prophet. Now,
okay.
John has a revelation. And in his revelation, an angel comes to him and gives him a reed, a measuring rod, and tells him to measure the temple in Jerusalem. There's only one temple that he's going to be talking to him about, right?
Right.
That's the temple, Solomon's temple, the house of God on the earth. Measure it. And he gives specific instruction, don't measure the courtyard, because that is for the Gentiles. If John has this revelation after the temple has already been destroyed and is no longer standing, does it make any sense at all?
No.
I mean, let's put a timeline on it.
I've always had one question, Ron.
Yes, sir.
He also talks about people outside the walls. Who are they?
People outside the city?
Yeah,
the new
who are
city?
They?
You're talking to one of them.
I'm one of those people that understands that this is a spiritual book. It cannot be read and understood with pure man logic and reasoning.
Well,
unless you contain the spirit, you're never going to know the secrets.
I think you're
and
exactly
I don't think
right.
any man ever, any man was, has or ever will figure out all the secrets.
Well, let me ask you something, because I know the exact part of Revelation that you're talking about. And it says, quite literally, that in the city, there is a river that flows out of the gates. Now, go back in your scripture. What is the river? Where does it come from? It flows from beneath the throne of God, and it is the river of life. Now, I used to be involved in a group that used to meet over here at the local church. The name of our group was the River Men, because we wanted to get in the river of God's Word. And he said, from your bellies would flow forth flowing rivers of life. Now, it says that along the river are 12 trees. Each bearing 12 kinds of fruit. There's that 12 thing again. Now, we know that the city was built upon the foundation of the 12 apostles. And the 12 trees, I contend, represent the 12 apostles. And the fruit that they bore, the 12 different kinds of fruit, are the various churches that sprang up based on the gospels. But it says, it goes on and says something further. It says the leaves of those trees are for the healing of the nations. Now, the nations exist outside of this city. This city that the writer is talking about is a spiritual city, what we would call heaven, the kingdom of Christ. Okay? That's a spiritual city. what would be the leaves if not the writings of Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Paul? It's the Gospels, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I believe. Those are the leaves. And outside of the city live rapists and murderers and sorcerers. And would you look around at what we have today? Because you and I are not in heaven with Christ. We're outside of that city. And the sun doesn't give any light. Only the Word of God gives true light.
Mm-hmm.
Only those that have the word of Christ can truly be enlightened. Everybody else is wandering around in the dark. This is what we were talking about. I say, you know, I go out in public and it's like the Walking Dead, the show. They're all a bunch of daggum zombies.
Right.
Why? Because they haven't taken up those leaves. They can't read the leaves. They lack exactly what Bill is talking about. They don't have that Holy Spirit within them. They lack discernment. They can't see the reality. Only now are they beginning to see the brutal truth, because it's so painfully obvious that even the liars can't deny it.
Right. And also, well, the primary reason that people are starting to pay attention is because they've been smacked in the head by a brick wall, Ron. It's affecting them personally. That's how stupid and sheeplish they are. And we've been saying this for a long time, but it is true. I mean, I encountered it this weekend. I was talking to my friend Fran, who's a libtard, and I mentioned about the, you know, the train wreck and the wall with the financial deal, and she just chooses not to believe that. She thinks everything's just fine. And she says, oh, they've been talking about that for years. And I said, okay, fine. I'm not going to argue with her because, you know, she doesn't read anything. So I thought, yeah, you just keep thinking that you're going to get your Social Security check. And when it stops coming, then we'll talk. You know,
Well, you know, you're right. They've been talking about it for years. And, you know, eventually even a stopped clock is right.
Yeah, I just didn't go into it because, you know, it would have taken another hour to try to explain it, and I just need to, I don't know where, but I did start, you know, figuring out a few things this weekend as well on how to approach different problems, how to wake people up, how to walk through it, how to walk the walk instead of just, you know, talking too much. I don't know. There's a couple things I'm trying to do.
I think Pastor Ron is going to be on his soapbox come Delaney.
Hey, that's fine with me, Ron. You know, Chad and I, we sit here, we kind of laugh. You know, our ancestor was Emmanuel Van Meter, and he translated the Bible. One of the very first English versions of the Bible was his. He put it together. And neither Chad and I, neither one are Lutheran.
Wow.
You know, the ancestors of Emmanuel, you know, you've heard of Emmanuel Lutheran. That's why they're called Emmanuel, is after Emmanuel Van Meteren. But our ancestor was also, another ancestor was one of the first, he was the first non-native to cross the Potomac. But he treated the Indians the same as he treated anybody. He didn't see them as less or anything like that. And he learned from them. He actually felt that many of them were friendlier than the people he came with.
Well, sure, because a lot of them didn't have any preconceived ideas.
But here we are today, and we're too quick to put our own self in front of everything instead of stepping back for a second and looking at the other person's position or whatever. We're too self-centered.
You know, too often, as Christians, and I know I've been guilty of it myself, we jump up and see ourselves as defenders of the faith, right? But then, you know, it took me a while, and long ago I realized, God doesn't need me to defend him to an atheist or anyone else. That's not my task. My task is to try and educate and get people to stop and think. And, you know, one of the things that we were talking about, when we talk, if we take the traditionalist, futurist view of Revelation, we're still waiting, okay? And it's the end of the world. Why then does it talk about outside the city all these other people that still exist? outside of heaven. If the world's been obliterated, there's a new world, and all the good folks are in heaven, and everybody else is in hell. Who are we talking about? What's these letters that, or these leaves that are flowing out to heal the nations? How could they possibly be healed if they're all condemned under God's judgment at that point?
Maybe it's the mermaid, Ron.
I don't know. That or the reptilian shapeshifters. Damned if I know.
Yeah, I know.
I've seen the report on the mermaids.
I must have missed that one.
The mermaids. I know. Although I haven't seen that.
I will say that I did see the North Carolina couple that's going to Hawaii to have their live birth of their child with dolphin assistance.
Oh, God.
It blows my mind. Are you really serious?
Oh, my God. It's amazing what we go through. Unbelievable.
The level of insanity is
If we didn't get something to laugh at, Linda, we would go nuts.
I know.
And I'm thankful
and there's plenty
for those
of
moments.
It. We've got,
guys,
it's
been great. Always enjoy doing the show with both of you. This was so awesome.
I know.
Thank you so much. Delaney.
Yes.
I'm looking at a list. We're bigger than 30 to 40 people or more. We don't know
good.
For sure yet.
We're gonna
have a good time and relax. And Ron, if you get on your soapbox, I believe there'll be people there to jump right up behind you and give you an amen.
Bill, I want to clarify. I remember getting an email that you've reserved a cabin for me. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I just want to be sure because my wife will, wife number one will shoot me if we end up staying in the Great Hall again.
Well,
I personally thought it was awesome.
Patriot Families has every cabin rented.
Awesome. Awesome.
We did not rent a lodge. We rented the cabins. We're going to have the pavilion on the Saturday night. If I can't get enough people there, we're just going to have a big old fire and have these guys playing guitars and we'll all sing around the fire. But we'll have a good time.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
I'm so excited. It's going to be great.
I know Scott and Chad, we're all excited to see everybody again and get back out there. And I'm hoping this year, so far, it's not going to be a dry year like it was last year.
Good. And don't forget to tune into my show, and I'm going to do the 41 seconds on the promo, and then I'll come back to you guys, okay? Hang on.
All right. Everyone be blessed.
Blog Talk Radio and Patriot Family is where you need to be if you want to be informed and inspired 5 days a week. On Monday at 7:30 p.m., you can listen to the Constitution Hour. On Tuesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Right from the Left Coast. On Thursday at 6 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Education. And on Friday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Exposed but Never Forgotten. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, we've got just about a minute left, so that's going to shut off by itself. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing well,
great.
All things considered.
Yeah, we're excited about Delaney. Everyone tune in for my show, and of course Terry's on Thursday, and we'll just take it from there. I know Mr. Magic has the stuff going on sometimes on Fridays. I don't know what's happening to Mike from Connecticut, so we'll have to see. Haven't heard a word, so hope he's doing okay. He's had a rough couple of weeks. Anyway, thank you guys. You did great. You're amazing. I did have a bunch of stuff lined up tomorrow for my show, and we'll have a blast. Have a good one.
God bless.
See you guys. God bless and have a great night.
God bless everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Keep my guns, try to keep my money and my religion too.
Try to keep on working. Try to keep on.
Good night. Be blessed. See you tomorrow night.